everybody. How are you this morning? Lovely, I hope. I like those glasses. Those are awesome. A word of congratulations to Daryl and Trish Pittman. They celebrated the birth of their second grandbaby down in Dallas, Texas, Landon Mark. And as I said in the first service, I tell you what, if I am as good looking as Big D is and have grandkids, I'm going to be pretty happy. So keep it going, man. We are in our Stuck Teaching series. We're looking at the story of Joseph. Today we're going to look at a decent chunk of scripture. We're going to read parts of the story. The whole story of Joseph's encounter with the Pharaoh is about 57 verses. So we're gonna pick up the first half and then sort of the after he interprets the dream part. So bear with me. And let's go ahead and read that this morning with some chutzpah. Here we go. When two full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile. When out of the river there came up seven cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, seven other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the seven sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. Seven heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, seven other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the seven healthy full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my shortcomings." Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was hanged. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret it, but I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." "I cannot do it," Joseph replied to the Pharaoh, "but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." So let me take a quick break there. Here's what happens. Joseph comes before the Pharaoh. God offers the interpretation of the dream through Pharaoh. And the idea is there's going to be 7 years of abundant harvest, followed by 7 years of great famine. And Joseph also offers a plan to build huge storehouses with chiefs in charge of each one of them, so that way they can reap in the years of abundance and they'll be able to give out in the years of famine. And then after he interprets the dream, this is where the scripture picks up again. Let's go ahead and read. "And now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of these good years that are coming up and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh, to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country, to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country may not be ruined by the famine." The plans seem good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." And let's go ahead and stop right there. go back here. Wells Crowther is his name, was your good all-American kind of guy. He's the kind of guy, if your daughter had a Friday night date, you would have some, not all, but some ability to put your trust in him. He had a good moral fiber, a high level of values. This is a guy who, when he was a teenager, decided one of the great ways that he could give and serve was to become a volunteer firefighter. Pretty honorable profession. And so Wells did this as a teenager. He was also an avid lacrosse player and ended up going to Boston College, a very fine university, on a lacrosse scholarship. And while he was there, he became a captain of the lacrosse team, got a good job after school as an equity trader. He was very successful. I mean, at a very young age, he had all of the right pedigree, all of the right resume. Here's a guy who, by the world's definition, was successful. You know what else he was? He was bored. And he called his dad one day, and he said, "You know what, Dad? There's nothing wrong with what I do. The profession is an honorable one, but I feel like I'm meant for something different. Like, there's a different plan for me, and I'm really giving serious thought to becoming either a full-time firefighter or a full-time policeman or being a part of the FBI or something like that so I can serve people and help people." You see, Wells' dad had instilled in him at a very young age that there were two kinds of folks in life. There were those who were like a white handkerchief, the kind that you wear on the outside with your suit where everybody looks at it and it's pressed and looks nice and everybody says, "Wow, that's wonderful. What a brand spanking new kind of person." And then there's another kind of person who's more like the red bandana type handkerchief that you stuff in your pocket and wipe the sweat of your brow and, yep, maybe even blow your nose on occasionally. There's those kind of folks. And so Wells always saw himself as the red bandana sort of guy, a guy who was called to serve others. And he was always looking for this divine moment in his life where he knew that he could live into this plan that God had for him. And you know what's different about Wells from the rest of the world? Not much. Not much. I think we're all looking for this sense of purpose, this sense of what's our divine moment. There have been all kinds of books written over the last 10 or 15 years about finding your purpose in life, about living into those divine moments that God has in store for you, about becoming the person that God created you to be. I mean, we all want to find that. We all want to be encouragers. We all want to be servants. We all want to leave the world in better shape than when we left it. Nobody wants to have the kind of funeral by which two or three people show up and just say, "Well, he lived," or "She lived." I mean, we want there to be stories or legacies about us, about the way that we've changed people's lives or changed the world or left it a better kind of place. And at some point, each one of us have heard or experienced that moment by which we knew we had to go do something with our lives, that God had called us to do something with our lives. We look at that in a variety of different ways. Some people call them the holy bumps. Some people say that they hear the still, small voice within them. Some people say it's a feeling of peace. But we've all experienced that kind of moment in our life where we recognize that there's two paths. And regardless of which one we take, something in our lives is going to change. That this is a divine kind of moment. The challenge to it is that these divine moments also require taking a risk. And we are a risk-averse culture, aren't we? I mean, and we need that to some degree. I need people in my life saying, "Ebel, that's not a good idea. That's way too risky." It's important to have those kind of voices in your life. But we're a risk-averse kind of culture. If it looks dangerous, if it looks too time-consuming, if it looks like you might get sued or something else, man, I'm out. I don't want any part of it. We can become a risk-averse kind of culture very, very fast. Look at the number of people who stop on the side of the road anymore. As soon as you think about pulling over to help your neighbor, somebody you haven't met, but Jesus nonetheless would call them our neighbor, what goes through your mind? What weapon might they have on them? If I help them and mess up their car, how's that going to work out, right? We have lots of divine moments in the book of Genesis as well, these moments in which God is calling people to make a powerful choice. I mean, if you look at Abraham, there's a great person to look at. Abraham would have been Joseph's great-grandfather. picture this. You're sitting there after dinner one night with your family, and all of a sudden you hear the voice of this God that you don't know, this God that you've never met, this God that you don't even know, this God's name. And you hear this, Abram, leave your father's house, your father's land, your father's household, everything that you have ever known, your friends, your family, your wealth, the whole bit, and take off for this land that I have in store for you. And there, I'm going to make you into a great nation. And by the way, you don't have a child to your name at the time. What are you going to think? I mean, if it's me, I'm going to think I had some really bad tacos for dinner or something. I mean, this is crazy. What a crazy plan. But divine moment, there's a powerful choice for Abram. Do I go or do I stay? It's not just a rock song, right? And then there's Isaac, who would have been Joseph's grandfather. And he realizes that there's this call, and he's supposed to leave comfort and security and provision and his family to go and find a partner for life, a wife. And so this is what Isaac does. And of course, Jacob, Joseph's dad. Now, this is the ultimate risk taker in the book of Genesis. Here's somebody who cheats his brother out of his blessing and his birthright. He puts up with his uncle Laban for the love of his life. And yes, he even wrestles with God. Jacob's a risk taker. I mean, throughout the first book of the Bible, there are all of these divine moments that God is calling all people to seize. And we experience these things in our lives every day. We use words like, I felt like I was at the crossroads in life. I could see that there was a destiny unfolding before me. The Bible's all about these divine moments. And you know what the divine moments are always born out of? They're born out of being stuck. People get stuck for a while, and then a divine moment happens. And what they realized was they really weren't stuck at all. It was a season of preparation. They just didn't recognize it as such. Look in the New Testament as well. Jesus rolls up on the seashore of Galilee. That's an ancient way of translating that, I suppose. And he says to these guys who are fishing in the boats with their dad, leave your dad, leave your boat, leave the nets, leave everything you know and come follow me. That's a risk, isn't it? He comes up to Matthew, the tax collector, on the side of the road. And Matthew would have been a man of decent wealth, hated by his family, I'm sure. But he says to Matthew, leave your tax collecting booth, leave all that you know, leave behind your past and come follow me. Pretty risky. Matthew was set. And this happens over and over and over again throughout the entire Bible where God calls people to seize these kinds of divine moments. The Great Commission is the greatest risk that anybody could ever undertake. Go into all the world and make disciples of every nation. So let's do a little recap. Joseph's been stuck. For 13 years, in fact. At the beginning of Joseph's story in Genesis 37, we read that he's 17 years old. 17 years old, and he goes to his brothers one day, and he says, hey guys, guess what? Someday you're going to all bow down to me, which is a great lead-in, you know, just for family relationships. And of course, they hate his guts for it, and so they throw Joseph down the cistern. And Joseph's stuck in the cistern, and Reuben comes along, and Reuben says, look, we can't kill the kid, right? He's got issues, and we all know that, and he's got this dream coat, and he thinks that he's wonderful, and blah, blah, blah. Let's just sell him to these guys heading to Egypt, and then we don't have to worry about it. We'll invent this whole pack of wolves theory, and it'll all be fine. And so now Joseph is stuck on the way down to Egypt, and then as he gets into Egypt, he's stuck at the house of Potiphar because he's got this old lady who's chasing after him all the time because he's a hottie with a body, right? And so he's stuck there, and then he ends up stuck in prison. And then while he's in prison, he gets stuck because the cupbearer, whose dream he interpreted, decides, I'm not going to let Joseph out. I got better things to do. So he remains stuck in prison. Folks, for 13 years, Joseph is stuck. 13 years. How many of you are going to wait 13 years for God's divine moment to surface in your life? Yeah, maybe 13 minutes. I mean, most of you are thinking like, is there a microwave version for that? Or, you know, like if I pay a little more, do I get the VIP pass? Or how does that? No, 13 years. At age 17, his moments of stuck begin. At age 30, finally he's unstuck. Who's willing to wade through all of that divine agony and pain? 13 years. And yet, you know what's funny? We wait 13 years all the time. I mean, it takes you 13 years to make it from kindergarten through senior year of high school. And I'm sure for both student and teacher, there are moments that feel like being stuck, right? Yeah, I see how that goes both ways. I'm stuck with this class this year, or I'm stuck with this teacher. So 13 years to graduate school. And then, you know, if you go into professional trade, it's going to take you a couple thousand hours to get licensed. If you go to college, it's going to take you another 4 years and umpteen trillion dollars and 120 some odd credit hours. So that way you can get a specialized sort of job, maybe. Medical doctors take somewhere between 7 and 10 years. It took me 10 years to get ordained as a pastor in the Methodist Church. I mean, we get stuck all the time. We just wouldn't call it that. So why is the timetable so different when it comes to God? So much of what we do, folks, is all about preparation and waiting and seasons of growth. God works on a different kind of schedule, doesn't he? Very much different than ours. I mean, nobody wants a surgeon without any gray hair, right? I mean, that's bad. Nobody wants a CPA who can't shave yet. And nobody wants an attorney who doesn't have a few furrows in her brow. Because experience is important. Going through the school of hard knocks, seasons of preparation, life's learning lessons are important. God's timetable is radically different. And throughout Joseph's season of 13 years of being stuck, what does he learn? Well, I think he learns to trust. I think he learns to realize that God's with him no matter what. And I think he learns humility. In Genesis 40, Daryl did a great job of teaching us last week. The chief cupbearer forgets all about Joseph. And a couple of years pass, and the Pharaoh has these dreams, and nobody, no magician, is able to interpret them. I want you to realize something, folks. In the ancient world, specifically the Egyptian Empire, the Egyptians are in control of the entire ancient world. And so when Pharaoh has these dreams that he can't interpret and nobody can interpret, and Pharaoh is the God of the ancient world, it's like saying Pharaoh, he ran out of wisdom. And Pharaoh's primary responsibility as the God of the ancient world is to steward the resources of the Nile River. So blessing and abundance and harvest and all of these sort of things provide for the people, and the empire continues to grow. So that Pharaoh has no ability to interpret this dream of healthy cows and sick cows. He's freaked out. Why? Because maybe I'm not God. And that his magicians can't interpret. What's up with that? So he imprisons them all. And all of a sudden, the chief cupbearer says, I remember this dude named Joseph. Let's call on him. The cupbearer gets thrown into prison, and Joseph is taken to Pharaoh. But there's this moment of preparation, right? We read that he shaves and he puts on new garments. When a divine moment comes, it's important that we also don't rush headlong into it without first calculating the cost. I mean, Jesus says this throughout the New Testament. He says, suppose a man builds a tower, does he not first calculate the cost? Have to calculate the cost of what it is to follow him. I mean, anybody who says, take up your cross and follow me, that's a pretty big cost, isn't it? So Joseph, he makes it to Pharaoh, and notice the answer that he gives. Joseph, need you to interpret this dream for me. All my guys, they're fresh out of interpretations. And what does Joseph say? I can't do it, but God will give the answer. God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Joseph's not a fortune teller. Joseph's not a magician. Joseph is someone who God has specifically sent for this specific season, for this specific divine moment. And what Joseph says is this: look, abundance is coming and then famine is coming. And so here's what we're going to do. We need to build warehouses. And this was completely unheard of at the time, to build warehouses as big as Joseph's talking about. We're going to build warehouses. We're going to stockpile the grain. You're going to put in charge officials who are going to make sure that there's no wonky stuff going on. And when the time comes that the abundance and the harvest is over, when the time of famine comes, there will be enough grain to provide for the people. 13 years Joseph waited for that one moment. And he could have missed it, right? Because let's face it, Lady Luck was not on Joseph's side throughout those 13 years, was it? I mean, it wasn't like, here's the guy you're going to put dibs on to win the lotto. So you got a picture when this guy comes to pick up Joseph from the prison, he's got to at least think in his mind, things have not worked out so well for me so far. I mean, glass is definitely half empty for me. I don't think this is a good idea. I give Pharaoh a bad interpretation. Or if Pharaoh had bad tacos this morning and doesn't like it, I might end up dead out of this. I think I'll just stay in prison. It's a whole lot safer. And nothing's worked out for me so far, so I might as well just stay here, forget it. But he doesn't. He risks. And he goes and he throws himself in the line of fire. Let me invite the band to come on back up. Let me ask you this question. Have you risked? Have you put yourself on the line to follow God's own calling on your life? When you see those moments, those divine moments in everyday life, someone who needs your help, someone who needs a listening ear, someone who would benefit from your wise counsel, do you risk and get involved? Or do you just say, nah, too risky? Here's the deal. Maybe sometimes we get stuck because God is getting ready to pull us from the pit to change the world. Let's continue to worship this morning. All right. Please have a seat, and let's take this opportunity to dismiss our kids to Revolution Kids Church.
Hills, that is.
You didn't have to stop. It was getting good.
Oh, was you going to sing?
Huh? Oh, I was not going to sing. No. Welcome to the holy hoedown, right? Oh, man. How many of you grew up with a safety patrol at your school? Yeah?
Wow.
Love it. I was on the safety patrol. Yep. Somehow I'm not surprised. Our belts were orange, though, and we didn't have the cool badge, but safety patrol is awesome for a number of reasons. One, you got out of school a little bit earlier. Fourth grade, you kind of had to earn your stripes, right? So you got the little bit lesser posts, like the walking path. But fifth grade, you got barricade duty, and that is where the action was, because you let the buses in and out, and, I'm safety, I'm bad, and all the chicks dug it, and so it was cool to be a safety, right? Yes. Helping little kids get across the road. Love it. Well, this whole idea of safety and predictability are the number one challenge to our seizing divine moments. And this idea of safety and predictability is perhaps one of the most important misunderstandings we have when it comes to the nature of God. A lot of folks think that God is sort of like that safety patrolman. And it's God's job to get us from point A to point B with safety and comfort and predictability with very little risk. And this is why everybody is so consumed in our culture, Christian folks are so consumed in our culture about what's God's plan or God's will for me. I mean, this is the reason for the rise of all the books and the studies and the what have yous. And we've got people looking forward and backwards and upwards and sideways, wondering all of the time, what's God's plan for me? Because if I figure out that plan, if I am right in the center of God's will, that's where the safety and security and comfort and predictability is. And God, very much like that crossing guard, is going to help me navigate the crazy world that we live in, right? Wrong. And that's why folks get let down when they get stuck or when something bad happens. It was God's job to keep me safe. Nope. Not always. This is a picture of a road. Anybody ever seen this road before? It's called the Road of Death, which is awesome, I think. And it goes through Paraguay. And there are no guardrails. The edge sometimes just decides to give way. And, you know, you plummet probably like, I don't know, 1,000 or 2,000 feet to your death. And as I've been rightly reminded, these are not Subarus, but they are Mitsubishis this morning. So clearly I don't know much about cars. But it looks exciting to me. I don't like flying. That's sort of my scaredy cat thing. But this looks like a good time. I'm in. Road to Death. Field trip? Anybody in? Sweet. All right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, what makes the road so amazing is number one, probably because it's dangerous, but number two, if you look at the scenery, it's breathtaking. Sure, you could take an interstate where there's the nice guardrails and the pavement and all this stuff, but are you really going to get that? No way. No way. I mean, it involves risk and danger and everything else. Erwin McManus says this. He says, to be outside of God's will puts us in danger, but to live in his will makes us dangerous. I like that. I think we live in the kind of world where it's all about avoiding all of the risks and then trying to claim that we've made a daring decision. Right? And yet what it seems to be with God all of the time is, yes, calculate, yes, discern, yes, pray, but then go. Go. Do you know what's going to happen? Nope. Do all the risk models? Nope. Because there's only one who knows the future, and that's God. And God does not provide or promise safety and security and predictability and comfort and all of these kinds of things. But what he does promise is an adventure. What he does promise is that he'll be with you along the way. What he does promise is that your life is in his hands. What he does promise is that you have the opportunity to live into the capacity that God has created you for. That's it. You in or you out. You choose. I mean, some folks, they get so crippled and stuck because they're worried about the risks that are involved. And so they stay stuck longer than they would ever need to. Here's the deal, folks. Don't pray and pray and pray for God to do all the work. And don't work and work and work and pray for God to bless it. Pray. And then go. Pray and then go. God, where are you at work? Where can I join you? I'll meet you there. I love what happens in this interchange between Pharaoh and Joseph. Pharaoh wants an interpretation. What does Joseph say? I can't, but God will give the answer Pharaoh desires. Now, do you think that at age 17, that would have been the answer that Joseph gave? No way. He would have been like, coat of many colors, what? I know it all. No. But after 13 years of being stuck, this man emerges and recognizes that his life is in his own hands. And every time he's tried to put it in his own hands, hasn't worked out so good. His life's in God's hands. God's the one who's put him here. For this moment, God will give an answer that Pharaoh needs. Let me ask you this. In whose hands is your life? In whose hands is your life? And Pharaoh realizes it. Remember, I taught you this morning that Pharaoh was the god of the whole ancient world. So picture this now. Pharaoh, position of divine authority, power, blessing, all of the stuff that the Egyptians would bow down and worship him for. And he says about Joseph, can anyone find someone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Do you realize what's just happened? The whole table has gotten flipped. A man in prison is the one who holds the keys to the kingdom, and the man who supposedly held the keys to the kingdom is revealed to be powerless. Whose hands do you put your life in? Jesus says that he's come to give us life and life abundantly. Not the kind of life that we can buy, not the kind of life that we can smoke up or drink up or eat up or try to gain for the next 20 minutes of ecstasy. A life that's bigger than all of that. A life that's filled with divine kind of moments for us to seize. A life in which we can live out the purpose for which God created us. You know, everybody wondered with Wells, why would you give your time to be a volunteer firefighter? Come out with us this weekend. There's lots going on. Come on. We're going to have a great time. Why would you spend your time there? You've got all the money you need. You've got the right pedigree. You've got the right resume. Why are you bothering with that? Just give it up. Come on. That was for your youth. It's not for now. And then his divine moment came. The date it happened was September 11th, 2001. And Wells was in the 104th floor of the South Tower. In a moment of complete chaos, what was Wells doing? He was directing traffic. You go over there. You get and take these people. Take them down the stairs. You set up a triage unit here. You do this. You put make sure everybody has a mask on their face so they don't breathe the toxic fumes. And what's Wells doing? He's ushering people up and down stairs so they can get out to safety. What was his divine purpose? To save many people's lives. Did he give his life for it? You bet. You bet. But it was the kind of life worth having, the kind of life worth living, the kind of life worth giving. And that's what Jesus calls of all of us. Dietrich Bonhoeffer says it like this: when Jesus calls a person, he bids them come and die. And Jesus says it like this: take up your cross and follow me. I want to know, how far are you willing to go to seize those divine moments that God has in store for you? Because look, folks, we see them every day, don't we? It's just that it costs us something. Whether it's somebody stuck on the side of the road or that coworker who comes into your office and you know what the next 30 minutes is going to bring. And sure, you might not be productive, and sure, it might take some of your time, and it might even not feel like the most comfortable thing to do, but God's put you there for that moment because your story and their story, in some way, they align and they need you. Maybe it's helping a brother or sister move. Maybe it's inviting somebody to come to church. Maybe it's going on a mission trip to the Dominican Republic. Maybe it's going down to 4th Avenue to serve somebody. Maybe it's a neighbor who needs you to watch their kids for an hour. Maybe it's your kids who deserve your time. Maybe it's your spouse who deserves more of your love. I don't know what that divine moment is, but you do, and God does. And is it going to be about you? Or is it going to be about him? I would love for you to take two little things away from today. Two little things that are big things. Here they are. Stuck, folks, is always the season of preparation. Stuck is always the season of preparation. And number two, when the divine moment comes, it will do so in the least opportune time, in the least likely place. And rather than calculate all of the risks, rather than sit on the sidelines, get in the game, and say as Joseph did, I can't, but God can. and watch what he will do, not only in your life, but the lives of other people. Let's pray.